Well, this is Arthur Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls. We're hoping to have Cal Grunfall on with us tonight, and Cal is in the gold and silver business, and of course he supports Radio Liberty, and we support him. We think he does a good job of providing information for our listeners, and these are difficult times. Most people don't really realize what's going on today, but unless, of course, you've lost your job or had to take a job with less pay, or perhaps you're not getting the wage increases that you really need to meet your living expenses. Certainly, we've been living very well in America for a long period of time, but I feel that those days are changing. Certainly, we see the destruction of the American automotive industry. Ford Motor Company now has offered to actually buy out 75,000 manufacturing workers, and they're laying off a large number of the people that work, at administrative jobs. I mean, we're talking about, thousands and thousands of administrative jobs, but they're offering to buy out their 75,000 workers, and they're going to give them each, I think, $140,000 just to walk away from their jobs and, of course, to leave their health benefits and their retirement behind. And a lot of them are taking that money. After all, $140,000 sounds like a lot of money, and yet many of the automotive workers are making over $100,000 a year right now with their benefits and other things. And once they've renounced their right to the job, why, they're gone forever. Now, what is really happening is Ford is shifting their manufacturing overseas. One of the most popular cars in Moscow, in Russia today, are the Ford motor cars. Ford is moving its production facilities into Mexico and elsewhere. Of course, General Motors is shifting its manufacturing into South Korea, into China, elsewhere, wherever they can get cheaper salaries. And as a result, manufacturing, as we've noted here in the United States, will soon become only a remembrance of things past. As you begin to look and see what's happening to the housing market, in most parts of the country, the housing market has peaked. Maybe prices are going up 3%, 4%, whereas before they were going up 25%. In certain parts of the country, like San Diego and Boston and a few other major centers, why prices have fallen dramatically. You're talking down 10 or 15%, but that's not the majority of places in the country, not just yet. But it's only a matter of time before we begin to see the whole housing bubble that's been supporting our economy for some time beginning to implode. And with that, of course, will go the hopes and futures of so many Americans, because there's an organized effort on the part of the Federal Reserve System not to stabilize our currency, but to destroy it. Why would anybody want to do that? Well, very simply because they have a different worldview. And certainly Mr. Greenspan and Mr. Volcker before him both came from the Trilateral Commission. And, of course, they are part of an internationalist group, about 120 members in the United States, from the United States at the most. And their plan is to create a new international economic order. And with that, of course, will have to be the destruction of America as the leader of the world. Doesn't make sense, but so much of what's going on doesn't make sense. Cal, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right, we're going to be with you in just a moment as we begin talking to Cal about what he sees going on in America and in the world today. Well, Cal, pick your up and tell me what you see going on and what your thoughts are.
Well, again, you did an excellent job of summarizing what I've been learning, too. One of my biggest concerns is the Middle East war that is brewing over there. We've had a temporary ceasefire, and but I was all they've done in the interim is supply Lebanon with Scud missiles and all the army armaments, convoys going in there all the time. So they're building up armaments. The Hezbollah has just been amalgamated into the Lebanese army. They've taken them under their wing. They're just part of that army now. And the Syria and Iran are financing them and arming them and everything else. So the next time that this thing flares up, I don't think we're going to see any more ceasefire or stop to it, and we'll have World War III. And then anything can happen at that point economically. We're going to have economic chaos everywhere. Of course, Israel's not going to back down. They're going to fight to the last person. And, of course, then the United States will get in. Russia will get in. All these big people on the sidelines are going to get in. And that's kind of the wild card in the equation. It's like smoldering right now. And so that's kind of what I fear the most is what's happening over there in the Middle East.
I think with good reason. I think that most Americans are living in a fool's paradise if they don't see that the administration is bound and determined to take us to a war with Iran. And that's really what 9/11 was all about. And that's really what the attack on Afghanistan was about. That's really what the attack on Iraq was about. They were stepping stones along the way to an attack on Iran, which from a totally logical point of view doesn't make sense. Oh, we're told Iran may have nuclear weapons and they're just crazy people over there. What about the Pakistanis? They've got nuclear weapons. Not only that, but they have sophisticated missiles to develop them with. What about the Chinese communists? They've got nuclear weapons. What about the Russians? They've got nuclear weapons. And the Indians have nuclear weapons. And the Israelis have nuclear weapons and have threatened to use them if they are backed into a corner. Why are they so determined to go to war with Iran? Because President Ahmadinejad, who looks like he said came from Central Casting someplace for a play, is making some irrational remarks. Because of he's a Muslim and they have some different beliefs. No, I believe that there is a cosmic script that's being played out now. And we're simply out there in the audience watching it, and most people do not realize the spiritual implications of what's taking place in the world today. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Cal was just saying he's very, very concerned about what's going on over there in the Middle East. And, of course, he thinks that there's going to be a war with Iran, and I fear that he is right. I believe that the decision has been made long ago by the men who rule the world that we're going to go to war with Iran. You'll hear people arguing back and forth in Washington, D.C., but it's very obvious that the Bush administration is carrying out somebody else's plan, and it seems to be to involve us in another expanded war in the Middle East. And, of course, right now you're seeing the manipulation of the price of the oil down and manipulating it down in preparation for the elections. But after the elections, and especially if we get involved with a war with Iran and they go ahead and they mine the Straits of Hormuz, and block gas oil going out of the Persian Gulf, we could very well see oil going to $100, $125, $150 a barrel. Our information suggests that they're mobilizing minesweepers. Our Navy minesweepers, submarines are being prepared for duty over in that area. Why would they want minesweepers? Why? Because the Iranians are saying they're going to mine the Straits of Hormuz with mines, and of course that would block the flow of oil, and we wouldn't allow that. We are obviously planning on some major sort of a military confrontation, and I share your view on that, Cal. But what about here in America? What do you see happening to our finances here?
Well, they're getting worse all the time. Of course, the Fed has put a temporary cap on raising interest rates, which is just kind of a rouge. But masking the real cancer underneath, which is inflation, which is raging. They say they give lip service to, they want to fight inflation, but they don't really come out and say what inflation really is. and how bad it's really getting. And of course, this again, as you mentioned, this is just an election gimmick, this dropping of oil prices. So they say, well, see how inflation is going down? Well, the Milwaukee Journal the other day, I read a headline that said, electricity is going to go up 25% this winter. Well, if you drop oil 10% and, you know, raise electricity 25%, what have you gained? I mean, what have you benefited anybody? So it's all a mind game that you know, the government plays with the masses, and of course the masses just say, well, I guess it is really nice that these gas prices are going down, not paying any attention to anything else while they watch their TV and eat their popcorn.
Well, I think what's interesting is that all of this is manipulated. They want to raise the price of electricity to force us to cut back on the utilization of electricity. I mean, you know, so they agree in the Northwest why, you know, they make most of their electricity through hydroelectric. It's not going to cost them any more to have hydroelectric electricity. They're going to raise the price on up because they want you to lower your living standards. And the same thing is true as far as the price of oil. One of the secondary benefits of driving the price of gasoline up is to get you out of your car so that we'll have less pollution, less CO2 in the air, and, of course, less global warming. At least that's the rationale behind the elitists who are really manipulating everything behind the scenes. And you are to be led to believe that all of these things are just happening by accident or because of politics. No, it's all planned, and you go back to the Second Earth Summit that was held in Rio back in 1992, and of course you go back and read the Global Biodiversity Assessment that came out of the Second Earth Summit, and they will tell you we're going to get the people out of their cars, we're going to get them cut back on energy utilization and lower their living standards, and if we're going to have 6 billion people in the world, they'll have to live at the level of the Eastern European. Well, of course, the Eastern European lives in abject poverty, at least in 1992. And that is what they really want. These are the elitists. That is their plan. But they can't allow people to really check, you know, to understand what they're up to. Anybody who'd like to check what we're saying, it's called something, the Global Biodiversity Assessment, published by Cambridge University Press. Now, we do have that summarized in our Sustainable Development Syllabus. If you want to read the whole thing, it's 1,152 pages, something like that. But we have a summary in our Sustainable Development Syllabus. People need to get it. Well, Cal, you know, certainly the price of gold and silver has gone down. You would expect that with what's going on in the world and the uncertainty and the possibility of a war in the Middle East, the price of gold and silver would be going up. What in heaven's name is going on?
Well, again, the bankers, the big boys are manipulating gold and silver. It's another psychology game. I mean, people are affected by it. And it's so amazing to me because, you know, I know as you, I'm a little bit, I shouldn't say a little bit, I'm not as knowledgeable as you are about a lot of things, but certainly the manipulation is first and foremost in front of my mind, and all I see is manipulation everywhere I look. And of course with gold and silver down, I never thought gold would get under 600 either, but here it is, you know, 583, 580, just hovering. Silver is around $11, and it was, you know, 13.5 just a month ago. And so people are saying, oh, well, I wonder if it's going to go down further. I don't think I'll buy right now. And they're just being lulled into complacency, as usual, by the psychology of it all. And that's the way the government controls the masses in this country, is just through the mind and through deceit and through psychology. And it's tremendously effective. Even the most intelligent people are just sitting there like a deer in the headlights, you know, and they're not doing anything.
Well, because people don't understand what's going on, because a lot of it doesn't make sense, and then they believe what they see on television, what they hear on radio, and they believe all these pundits who tell us that there really is no significant inflation, we're keeping it down to 2 or 3%. And I would simply ask, are you going to believe what the government agents tell you, and the people who are employed by the government and by this cabal that really runs things, are going to believe what they tell you, going to believe your lying eyes? I went out to buy some artichokes the other day, and I don't do a lot of purchasing, and there's beautiful big artichokes, and I can remember when they used to cost, you know, $1 each. They were $3. I couldn't believe it. and the price of so many things, it keeps going up and up and up. And yet the government tells us that there's no inflation. Now, either they don't understand what's going on, or they're intentionally deceiving the American people. But obviously there's inflation. Maybe the price of certain goods that are coming in from other countries like China have not gone up. But that's because China has tied their value of their currency to ours, and they're able to, of course, maintain a fairly stable price structure. But one of these days, you know, when people don't want the American dollar anymore, and remember, we're borrowing $1 trillion a year from other countries. We're borrowing $3 billion a day, and over a period of 365 days, that comes up to about $1 trillion. We're borrowing $1 trillion every year right now from other countries, so we can continue our wars of adventure and plunge us into another war in the Middle East, which will eventually bankrupt America and destroy the living standards of the American people. And it's happened to other great countries in the past. People don't see it happening here, Cal. Why don't they understand that you can't keep spending more than you're selling? You can't keep borrowing from other countries indefinitely. One day you have to start paying it back again.
Well, again, Dr. Stan, the problem is that people don't know history, and of course the old adage goes, if you don't know history, you're bound to repeat it. And I was just thinking the other day, I'm going to be writing this in my paper as kind of an addition, but I was thinking about the contrast between what it was in 1933 when Roosevelt was in place, and also our money at that point was gold and of course silver, as opposed to 2006. And there's some very interesting things we can look back and learn from, and transfer to today, and we see the contrast of what it was like then and what it is like now. For instance, in 33, we had gold, right? We had gold coins, and that was our money. And of course, silver also. And Roosevelt and his big bankers orchestrated the confiscation of that gold because, they couldn't extend their credit. They couldn't, expand their empires, and they had to get people into paper scripts so that they could, abuse it and just keep printing it, because it takes a lot of effort and manufacturing and mining to get gold out of the ground and mint it into a coin. So it takes effort in production. And, you hire people, and, it's like manufacturing. Like General Motors going out of the country, so is Ford dissolving. Well, these are all manufacturing jobs. So you eliminate jobs, and, it doesn't take anybody. It takes one person to run a printing press. And, these dollars cost, what is it, 3 cents a piece, whether it's a dollar bill or a $100 bill. So they wanted to get real money out of people's hands and give them fake money. Well, they've become way, way more sophisticated now. And just through the media, they've convinced people that the dollar that they have in their hand, it's real. It's money, but it's really not. It'd be electronic money, be digits in there on their deposit slip, or in the stock market, the digits or the numbers that represent, money. They're real money, but they're not. So they've convinced people that they've convinced people to trust the government and their institutions with their wealth. Back in 33, when Roosevelt called in all the gold, he said, "Bring it to a bank." He declared a two-day banking holiday. Bring it to the bank and cash it in under penalty of 10 years in prison or a $10,000 fine or both. Well, people had a choice. They had money. They had real money in their hand. Either they could turn it in or suffer the consequences possibly of, being caught. Well, I talked to one old-timer years ago. He said, I'll tell you something. There's more gold buried in this country than what was turned in. But people had a choice. Now they don't have a choice. They have fake money. If it's in dollar form in their hand or their wallet, and they have fake money in the banks.
Hang on that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Cal Grunwald, talking really about the fact that they shifted us from real money, gold and silver, to a fiat money system, and there's no instance in all history where a fiat money system has not eventually collapsed. Well, Cal, go ahead. You were talking about how back in 1933, Sydney had a gold system. Gold was $20 an ounce. Gold today is about $600 an ounce. It's gone up 30 times in value. But what really has happened is that the value of the paper dollars that they received in 1933 have gone down 30 times in value. The average individual doesn't understand that if you rely upon paper money, eventually why your wealth will be destroyed. And the people who were foolish enough to turn in their gold back in 1933, many of them were impoverished because of it. And not only that, but as soon as they had turned in their gold at $20 an ounce, then the government doubled the price almost doubled it, to $33 an ounce for gold. And the honest people, of course, lost out. The bankers who did not turn in their gold, of course, made out like bandits. And they did exactly the same thing with silver. They doubled the price of silver at that time. And there's a book called by Curtis Dahl, something about my unknown or my not understood father-in-law, something of the sort. And, of course, Curtis Dahl tells about going to visit his father-in-law, the President of the United States, and waiting in the anteroom with him was a man named Bernard Baruch. And he said, "Mr. Baruch," who at that time was one of the richest men in the world, "what's a good investment?" And Mr. Baruch said, I think silver is a very good investment. I own over half of the silver in the United States." And, of course, Dahl said, I did not realize the value of what he was saying. Mr. Baruch went in, talked to my father-in-law, and about a week later, they doubled the price of silver. So, of course, Mr. Baruch became a very valuable man, a very wealthy man, and poor old Curtis Dahl did not take advantage of the inside tip he had. Best tip he ever had. Go ahead, Cal.
Well, again, I'm just very, very, I'm always amazed by how the government does things and how they're so clever and how they've set out, they've set basically a trap for the American public to get their wealth. Because they've convinced, there's so many people in this country that I talk to that don't trust the government. But on the other hand, they have their wealth in government institutions, so it doesn't make any sense. And when you ask them why, if you don't trust the government, you have money in their institutions, they don't have an answer. Well, they're just ready to get caught, and the government has a number of documents in place, and I mentioned them in my paper. But one of them is Article 43 from the 1933 from the 73rd Congress in 1933, and it's got a couple of very interesting sections in here, and I think I mentioned a little bit on the air before. But one of them is that when a person puts money in the bank, they actually, it says here that in such cases it is well settled that the depositor parts with the title to his money and loans it to the bank. And so when you put money in the bank, you think it's, safe, that's your savings account, but you give up title to that money and you loan it to the bank. So then it's the bank's prerogative whether they want to default on that loan or not. And then there's another section in this Article 43, which I'll be glad to email to anybody who wants it. But it says the ultimate ownership of all property is in the state. Individual so-called ownership is only by virtue of the government, that is, the law, amounting to a mere user. And the use must be in accordance with the law and subordinate to the necessities of the state.
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Cal was basically talking about some things that were written back in 1933 about how the government really had decreed that you don't own the money. What you put in the bank, you've loaned it to the bank, and you have no claim on it other than if the bank wants to give it back to you. But as far as your ability to get the money out, if the bank doesn't want to give it back or wants to suspend payment, why, of course, you are in a difficult position because the bank is regulated by the government and the government can determine whether the bank has to give it back or not. And then he was talking about, of course, what this laws back in the 30s said about the rights of private property. Would you like to pick up that thought for us, Cal? Because I think most people really think that they own their property.
Even if you think you own your home free and clear, you got a car, a boat, or an RV, or a piece of land, it says, again, the ultimate ownership of all property is in the state. The state owns the property. You just think you do. You think you have a document, title of deed or whatever it is, but it's just a piece of paper. The state actually owns it. So it's really another mind game. It's another way to deceive people.
Now, are you sending that out to people, or do you actually have that all printed up, and will you send
it? I've got it all printed up. If people want it, they can ask for it. I also have it on an electronic file. I can email it to people.
All right. How can people get in touch with the Cal?
Okay. There's probably the simplest way. You can call me. My number is 414-234-8267. That's 414-234-8267. Or you can go on my website, which is silverexchange.info, I-N-F-O, like information. So it's www and then goldandsilverexchange.info, and then there's a contact page there. You can request any documents that I'm offering here, and I'll be glad to send them to you.
All right, fine. Let me just briefly read it to our listeners, and we've done this before, but this is something that Alan Greenspan wrote back in 1966. Now, remember, Alan Greenspan was the chairman of the Federal Reserve Board from 1987 until January of this year. But this is, he wrote, even 1965, actually. In the absence of the gold standard, there is no way to protect savings from confiscation through inflation. There is no safe store of value. If there were, the government would have to make its holding illegal, as was done in the case of gold. The financial policy of the welfare state requires that there is no way for the owners of wealth to protect themselves. This is the shabby secret of the welfare state's tirade against gold. Deficit spending is simply a scheme for the confiscation of wealth. Deficit spending is simply a scheme for the confiscation of wealth, and we have massive deficit spending today. We are having to borrow $1 trillion a year, $3 billion a day right now, from other countries simply to maintain the stability of our economic system. And as we continue to expand our wars throughout the world, and remember, when they talk to you about the debt of the United States, they always forget about the wars, they forget about everything that's off budget, and so many of the pork things, and the rebuilding of New Orleans, and the storm damage down along there, that's off budget. And so when they tell you that things are looking so much better this year, and our deficit only is going to be, maybe $290 or $300 billion less than last year, they're simply lying. They're not mentioning they've stolen all the money from Social Security and Medicare and all the off-budget items. We are having to borrow $1 trillion a year from other countries simply to pay our debts. How long can that go on? I don't know, but I don't think it's going to be much longer, especially as the entire world turns against America when we go into war in the Middle East. We're going to be alone. Europe is not going to be with us. Most of the European nations, other than England, of course, because of the relationship, the Cecil Rhodes Secret Society that joined America and the United States. While the rest of Europe, most of the rest of Europe, is not going to stand with us any more than they're standing with us in Afghanistan today and picking up the slack as we pull those troops out to take them into the slaughterhouse in Iraq. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. So if you agree, if you disagree, give us a call. But remember that when great nations go into war after war after war, eventually, great nations become bankrupt. And Cicero was saying, 30 or 40 years before Christ was born, the budget must be balanced. Public spending must be reduced. The arrogance of officials must be curtailed, and certainly foreign spending must be stopped, else Rome will go bankrupt. Thank you. Well, Cal, most of the people that you come in contact with, and I know you're talking to people across the nation all the time, probably much more than I'm. Do you think most of the people are actually aware of what's going on? Are people buying gold and silver now, or are they waiting to see if they'll go lower?
A lot of people are waiting to see if it's going to go lower. They're just sitting on the fence. Some people who see the advantage of gold being low, you know, having been at 730, now it's at 583. You know, some people are buying, but there was a lot more buying when gold was going up, which of course didn't make any sense. But again, nothing makes any sense in this country to most people because they don't understand how things work. I talked to a lady, the reason I mentioned Article 43, and I also want to talk a little bit about emergency banking order, too, that is in my information package, is because in Article 43, basically, it says that, you know, the depositor gives up title to his money when he deposited it in the bank. And, of course, that's the same rationale that the brokerage firms use, the insurance companies, the insurance agents, that when somebody puts money in their institution, it becomes their money. They are trained to do anything in their power to keep the money there. And if the client wants it, they can use any method that they want, whether it's, you know, coercion or, you know, lying or making up stories. Like it happened about 2 weeks ago, a lady heard me on your show. She called in and she said, well, I'm really concerned about, you know, she had $60,000 in an IRA, and she was like 82 years old. She said, I've got a really good pension. I've got a lot of, you know, savings and I can use for cash. And she wanted to put that into gold, but, you know, she called her broker and he just had a fit. And he would only let her get $20,000 out to put into gold. So she only bought 20. And so she said, I've been talking to her about, you know, getting the other out, but she's so scared. Oh, this broker, he got mad at me last time, and he yelled at me, so I think I'll just sit here for a while. And this is what really, really makes me mad when I hear things like this, and not because I missed the sale, that's not the point. But these people, these brokers, whatever they are, they don't care about the person's well-being. You know, they claim that, you know, gold is a thing of the past. I mean, this is all propaganda. A lot of them do know gold is real money, but they just care about their commissions, and it's money out of their hand and out of their business. They don't care about, you know, the little old lady that's all she has to fall back on, and they know when the banks close their doors, she's not going to get it either. But so it just really makes sense.
Well, hold that thought right there. We'll be right back here in just a moment, and let's first go to let's see if we've got this right. Is this Herman from Carmel? Hello, is this Herman? Or is
this
Jeff?
This is Jeff from Naples.
Okay, fine. Go ahead, Jeff. What do you have a question or comment?
Yes, I do. The reason I'm calling, I got it's an estimate from some people that I know that after Bin Laden's next warning or tape, there is a possibility that this country could get hit in some way within a few weeks to a month. I mean, does that sound like paranoia or a strong possibility?
All right. What are your thoughts on that, Cal? And then I'll tell Jeff what I think.
Well, Bin Laden, you know, it's just, you know, it's like an Oswald. It's just a patsy. There's no credence there at all. It's, you know, the government is doing all these things inside, you know, for their own devices and their own reasons. Bin Laden's just a fiction.
All right, Jeff. As far as I'm concerned, I mean, the government had at least 11 times the opportunity to take out Osama bin Laden before the 9/11 attack. They absolutely refused to do it. Now, why would that be? Well, you can go back and read those things. We have a book called The Devil's Game, and it just traces the whole history of this radical Islamic movement and how it was all funded by the American and British intelligence. And you can go back, and we have a book called Dollars for Terror, written in 1999, 2 years before 9/11. And of course, there's the Swiss investigator went all over Europe trying to find out who was financing Al-Qaeda. And decided it was Pakistani intelligence, Saudi Arabia, and the American CIA. A similar book written by John Cooley called The Unholy War is written in 1999. And the CIA was passing out, Qurans to the Mujahideen, indoctrinating these holy warriors, these Arabs, in this radical form of Islam and financing the Taliban. So much of what we get today is simply doctored. First of all, we have unfairly good information from people in key positions like Michael Ledeen, who is certainly one of the elite behind everything. He says Bin Laden's been dead for over a year. This is not to say we're not going to have another attack in America, but I suspect it'll be engineered by the same people who did 9-1-1. And if you go up on the internet and you look at Building 7 coming down, that was controlled demolition. There's no way that that had anything to do with a plane striking the building or something hitting the building on the top from falling from the Twin Towers. That was a controlled demolition. And if it was a controlled demolition, then everything we've been told so far about the war on terror is as phony as a $3 bill. If you read the lead article in the latest issue of Foreign Affairs, which is read by the elite, not by common people like you and me, but the lead article, September, October issue of Foreign Affairs, says basically that there's very little, if any, threat from al-Qaeda here in the United States. If we do have another attack, it will be engineered to increase the government's control over the lives of the American people. That is my fear.
Do you feel it seems as if they're ratcheting up potentially for something just down that line, though? Do you get that intuitively, that feeling?
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. And I think that they will utilize something. They will create an incident to justify taking away our freedom. They will create an incident to get us involved in a war with Iran. Remember, they created the Gulf of Tonkin incident. And now we find out it was a lie. 58,000 Americans died because of that lie. And a million South Vietnamese and 2 million North Vietnamese. Who created the lie? The same people who created the 9-1-1 incident. They are unconcerned about human suffering and death.
If that is really true, Dr. Stan, and I believe you, I believe that it is, does this country deserve to be attacked?
No, I believe that what we need to do is educate the good people. There are not very many wicked people. They just hold the reins of power and the wealth. What we need to do is have a spiritual revival in America so that this country would be worth saving. And what I do is an effort to educate people, and we do this 5 hours a day. And I believe that there's a growing awareness in America. I'm more optimistic than I've ever been before. And I've been at this for 44 years, Jeff. So our job is simply to keep working and trying to make the people understand what's going on and hope that there will be a great revival.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. Thank you, Cal.
God bless.
Very good.
Okay, let's go to Herman calling from Carmel. Did you have a question for our guest, Herman?
Well, I was going to ask him to comment on bags of old American silver as a storehouse of wealth for people that maybe don't have a whole lot of money. But one other comment I wanted to just bring up and see what both of you say is the former head of Homeland Security, on the day he retired, gave a speech, and he said he was absolutely terrified at the possibility of our food supply being tampered with or poisoned. Now, we currently have an E. coli outbreak, which they have not yet traced, and they say it's a very virulent strain, and I'm wondering if there could be some foul play involved here or somebody trying to manipulate that situation.
George, Herman, do you have a comment on that?
Cal, you mean?
No, I'm sorry. Cal, do you have a comment on what Herman was saying?
Yeah, first of all, the bags of silver, yes, I certainly do recommend silver for barter. It's going to be essential because you can't barter with a gold coin. It's going to be simply too expensive and it's going to be worth too much. So I advocate, people buying what's called junk silver at 90%. That's the dimes, quarters, and half dollars. They were minted prior to 65. And any amount that you can get is going to be very, very good for you, helpful. I recommend a bag, which is 55 pounds per household. But if you can't get a bag, half bag, quarter bag, eighth bag, it's all going to be very, very useful. Now, I tell people, like a lady called this week, that she had $10,000 to put into gold and silver. And I asked her, well, do you have your 6 months or years worth of food? first, because that's what you're going to need to buy with your silver when the time comes. But she said no. I said, well, then, you know, get your 6 months or years worth of food first and call me if you have money left and we can talk. So that would be my first suggestion, that you get some food and store that up, and then, you know, buy some silver if you don't have that much, you know, money to put into the metal.
All right, and of course, as far as the issue of tampering with the food supply, Herman, there's something very strange about what's going on. Purely from a logical point of view, if people have gotten, you know, contaminated and gotten this very virulent form of E. coli infection, you would think that they would start testing the spirit that comes from various fields before they would have the entire crop of spinach plowed under, which is what they're doing. You would think they'd try to find out where it came from, and they would not insist at all that the spinach be destroyed until they had checked it out. It would be very simple to test it and find out if it contained E. coli. They're not doing that. They're not handling this thing from a logical point of view at all. And I don't know what's going on, but I can tell you that what we are seeing has very little to do with reality or sound public health. It doesn't take that long to find out if there's E. coli on spinach and it's dangerous to eat.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to find out down the line what the truth of the matter is, but right now they're simply deceiving us once again.
Well, we never did find out where the anthrax came from, did we?
Oh, sure we do. We know where the anthrax came from. It was militarized anthrax. It came from our own laboratories. And, of course, they know where it came from, because on the very evening of September 11th, 2001, Dick Cheney and the entire White House staff and presumably the president started on Cipro. And the only reason you take Cipro is if you knew an anthrax attack was coming. How did they know on September 11th? And if they did know, why didn't they tell the rest of us?
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions, Herman?
No, that's fine. I enjoyed the program.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Mm-hmm.
Again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And our guest is Cal Grunfather. We're simply talking about what people should be doing. Well, Cal, if I was going to go out today and I was going to get something to perhaps try to protect at least part of whatever wealth I did have, if I had any wealth, that is, what would you tell me to do?
Well, again, I would tell you to have some silver for barter, and then gold to preserve your wealth. And of course, you've got to do silver in moderation. I can't, you know, I emphasize this enough, because there's so many people out there who are listening to invest in silver, invest in silver, invest in silver, but they end up with hundreds and hundreds of pounds of it, which is, you know, one way is good because you have real metal, but another way is it's hard to store. It's, you know, how are you going to move it? You've got to be mobile. It's very, very impractical that way. So you've got to have silver in moderation so that it can be portable. You can store it, you can hide it, you know, fairly easily. And then the majority of your wealth that you want to preserve, you should buy gold coins with it.
All right, fine. Well, we've got Dan calling from Spokane. As soon as we get Dan up through here, why? But would you suggest that people get just bullion coins, that they get collector's coins? Would you suggest that they certainly get some old Liberty coins? What sort of coins should they get?
Well, I'm kind of middle of the road. A little bit of bullion is all right, like American Eagles or Maple Leafs or Krugerrands, but bullion is risky. It's confiscatable, and the payback is only $50 an ounce. Bullion also doesn't have any upside potential for people who are looking to, you know, to make some money. What I recommend are the old gold coins that are minted prior to 34, like the $10 and $20 Liberties, St. Gaudens, and the low grades. So these are circulated, extra fines, or almost uncirculated, so the premium is pretty close to spot. And these coins have some protection from the confiscation, and they also have tremendous upside potential, which I really don't stress too much because I don't advocate selling your gold coins when they go up dramatically in a supply and demand situation. But those are the coins I recommend, and the big gold coin companies in the country, they don't sell these circulated coins because there's really very little money in them, not much profit. They sell these high mint state MS 65, 66 coins at well, for 3, 4, or 5 times what they're worth, or they sell foreign gold misrepresented as private non-confiscatable, put on anywhere from 40% to 80% commission on it. Anyway, I explain all these things in my paper, and it's kind of an educational piece.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to Dan, who's calling from Spokane. Hi, Dan. How you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. Good. Hey, disillusioned as I am with our government right now, and I think the corruptness that goes sort of to the highest levels and being manipulated. Is there, and the godlessness that exists here? Is there another country in the world that? Canada or somewhere that does not have the kind of problems that we're seeing, or is everybody having the same problem?
All right. So how would you answer that, Cal?
Well, certainly the problems that we're having are not common to us. They're all over the globe. In fact, it's much worse other places. We just don't know about that. To me, the safest place in the world is still in this country. There's plenty of places here that you can find solitude in a kind of a secluded place of safety and kind of get ready. I'm not advocating just heading for the hills, but I fully believe we're going to see enemy planes over our skies in just a matter of time. But it's still the safest place. In fact, the Muslim world is so incensed now against us that it's not safe for an American to go anywhere in the world. It really isn't.
And I think, Dan, I would tend to agree with Cal. When I was young and foolish, I thought maybe there might be some safety in a place like the Azores at that time. Why, Portugal was a very anti-communist government until the communists took over the government, and of course then they turned Angola and Mozambique over to the communists. Eventually they had a counter-revolution, but there's no safety there. You're a foreigner in a foreign land. I went to live in South Africa for a time, thinking South Africa was going to be safe until the communists took over there. And our government brought a Marxist government, Nelson Mandela, into power. And, of course, when Nelson Mandela was brought in, of course, we're told he was a great liberator. Yeah, he was. Of course, there was Fidel Castro and Gaddafi, and all the communists from all over the world were there celebrating because the American State Department had brought a lifelong terrorist and Marxist to power, Nelson Mandela. But he was much better than the fellow they've got there now, Mabiki, who, of course, works very closely with Gorbachev's State of the Union forum. In fact, he's on one of the vice presidents of that. He's the current president of South Africa. There's no place in the world that's safe. You're better here with people that speak your language, but because the battle for the survival of Christian civilization is here. And if everybody were to run, there'd be no hope of preserving what we have in this country and in Europe. And the battle for Christian civilization is in America. And if it's going to be either won or lost here, and I hope it's going to be won, but our job is to do our best. In the final analysis, it's God's battle. And I have enough confidence in him that I'll stick it out and see what he has in store for us. But you're going to have to make that decision yourself. I'm going to be staying here.
All right, thanks, Dr. Stan. Appreciate it.
Okay, fine. Again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And our guest, of course, is Cal Grunwald. Now, Cal, you were saying that these low-grade coins that you were speaking of, the older gold coins, you say that they perhaps are not as confiscatable as the others, but certainly they can confiscate whatever they want to if they really want to, can't they?
Well, yes. I mean, the government can't be trusted to do anything noble or honest. So, yes, they can confiscate anything they want. But it just if people are looking for coins that have some upside potential, the first time ever in my career in the gold business, I'm recommending that people put investment money in these low-grade gold coins because they have, as recently as 1999, they over doubled in price over a comparable weight bullion coin.
All right, that's interesting to know.
Simply because of supply and demand. So, again, I don't advocate selling them at that point because what that indicates is that the dollar is collapsing even faster than it is now, and it's not a good situation. So, well, but again, those are the coins to get.
Well, let's get your web page and your telephone number out one more time.
Yeah, my website is www.gold and, right out the word, and silver, exchange.info, I-N-F-O.
GoldandSilverExchange.info.
Right, that's my website. And my phone number is 414-234-8267. 414-234-8267.
And you have a package you'll send out if they do call that number?
Oh, yeah. So we have a 32-page paper exposing the scams in the coin industry, and it's got other very interesting documents. Emergency banking order, which I might have time to refer to a little bit here.
All right. Let me read right now David calling from Coeur d'Alene. David, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
All right, fine. We're going to be with you in just a minute. We'll take your call, and then, of course, the program is going to be over, so I just hang in there for just a moment.
Thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. We've got David from Coeur d'Alene calling. David, did you have a question or comment?
Yes. I just thank you for everything that you do for the Republic. And wanted to mention, I've reviewed Cal's material, and it's very excellent. It's very clear, very concise, and very understandable. People should get it and become informed. My question is, from World War One, the War College, MI1 Intelligence, the Department of Navy, through World War II, is there someone within the community that can identify or come up with the concept of self-targeting, and if it is still part of naval intelligence?
Well, what is self-targeting?
Self-targeting, when a facility or area of the battlefield becomes non-productive and or is not recoverable, that it is targeted from within. And I had it on very, very good authority a long, long time ago, and my thoughts went back to that with 911 the second time, not 93, but then again in 2001. Self-targeting, it's part of naval intelligence, and I've looked and looked and looked in the military archives, etc., but I'm not the researcher that there are a lot of people out there on the internet have the capability of.
All right, fine. Have you ever heard of this, Cal?
No, I haven't.
I'm afraid, David, I can't help you either, but perhaps some of our listeners can, and if anybody knows anything about self-targeting, why, we have David from Coeur d'Alene calling, and David, you can leave your number with our producer, and if anybody does call in, we'll certainly get in touch with you, but I'm not acquainted with that concept at all.
It would explain a lot, though. If you could, I would appreciate it if I could leave that information.
All right, fine. Well, you just hang on. We're going to put you on hold here and get our producer to get your number. And if something does come up, we'll be glad to get in touch with you. Well, Cal, these are certainly exciting times. My fear is that most people are not going to make preparations. People have got to get out of debt. They've got to stop spending. They've got to start saving. They've got to start making preparations. I think you're absolutely right. I think people should be laying in food and medical supplies and health supplies, because there could be shortages. They could come very, very soon. And fill up your gasoline cans right now, because after the election, why, I very much fear things are going to go right through the roof. Cal, do you have a parting thought for our listeners?
Yes, well, I would agree 100% with all that, and I'm just encouraging people to...
Hold that thought for just a moment here. Well, I was just asking, certainly, Cal, do you have a parting thought for our listeners?
I'm just encouraging people to take a good hard look at their electronic money, their assets like the IRAs, their annuities, the bonds. Of course, the 401ks are kind of hard to get out of there while you're working for the company, but, that's your wealth that you've worked hard all your life to accumulate, and it's somebody else's hands that you can't trust.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Cal. We'll look forward to talking to you again next month. Bye-bye, and God
Thanks,
bless.
Thanks, Dr. Stan.
All right, fine. And so now this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. And, of course, if you're out across America listening to us and you think that we have an important message and you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, our number is 1-800 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. I do want to mention that there's going to be a special meeting up in Stockton on this coming Saturday. It's going to be on the emerging church movement, mysticism, and the New Age and mystical practices in the Christian church. The meeting at Stockton is going to be held at the First Baptist Church at 3535 North El Dorado Street in Stockton. And if you're interested in learning more, it's going to be all day long from 9 to 4. Call 503-873-9092. That's 503-873-9092. It's going to be a couple of great speakers. We've interviewed them in the past. People like Brian Flynn and Bob DeWay. So give us a call. Give them a call if you'd like to get to that meeting. And then, of course, don't forget our meeting we're going to have here on October 29th. That's October 29th. It's a Sunday all day long. Constance Cumby is going to give two talks. Chris Potter is going to have an hour and a half talking about the secret mysteries of America's beginning. Michael Shaw is going to be there. Barrett Shows has a great talk. You'll certainly want to come if you possibly can. If you're coming from a distance, why, give us a call and we'll give you a connection to the local hotels. And, of course, we hope that you'll come, you'll bring your friends. We'd like to get a good turnout. I'm encouraged by the response we've had so far. So remember our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. For an analysis of what's going on financially, let me suggest my talk, The Financial Tsunami. And, of course, you can get it in DVD or in VHS. And then, of course, the syllabus goes with that. It's so important to really understand these various terms, M1, M2, M3, gross domestic product, the zip figures, the Federal Reserve reports. And we explain all of these things to you. That is the Financial Tsunami syllabus and, of course, the VHS or DVD. And then, of course, have our book, The Brotherhood of Darkness. We also have a pamphlet we put together, The History of Money. And that will give you a lot of great information. It's inexpensive, and we recommend that. We carry, of course, the Creech book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, or The Federal Reserve Conspiracy by Professor Sutton, or the book Fiat Money, Inflation in France. Those three books explain to you exactly what's going on in America today. And if you read Fiat Money, Inflation in France, which is based upon what happened in France in 1789, and look and see what's happening in America, it's deja vu all over again. Then, of course, we hope many of you will certainly want to get the information we have on fluoride. It's called The Hidden Agenda. The VHS and the syllabus should be seen together to understand the Iraq War, Iraq, the Untold Story, the VHS, the syllabus. To understand Fidel Castro and how and why the United States brought Fidel Castro to power, using the same technique we used to bring the communists to power in China in 1949, Fidel Castro to power in 1959, of course the Ayatollahs to power in 1979, and of course the Sandinista to power in 1979. They use the same techniques over and over again, and most people have no idea what's going on. You need to see my video, The World Revolution, contains my interview with Ambassador Earl Smith. We did the same thing in Nepal recently, brought the communists to power. So pray for America and pray for revival. Pray for radio liberty, for our provision and our protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king, and that the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and, well, today we're going to have Andrew Skousen with us from World Affairs Brief, and he's one of the researchers who works with his dad, Joel Skousen, and we'd love to get Andrew on, just talking about his view of what's going on in the world today. Andrew, are you there?
Absolutely. Good to be with you, Dr. Stan.
Okay, fine. Sounds like you were just next door. Andrew's over in the Las Vegas area. Anyway, what are we going to talk about this evening? What are the major issues you'd like to bring before our listeners tonight?
Well, I think there's always a great deal to bring to the listeners. I think some of the most important items that I'd like to touch on tonight include the recent developments with Professor Stephen Jones that has been raising a lot of controversy in Utah over his position about the events of what happened in the 9/11 attack.
And, of course, he is a professor at Brigham Young University, isn't it? And, of course, he's an engineer. He understands a lot about construction, and he has actually questioned the official government conspiracy theory, which is that 19 hijackers came to America and conspired to take down the Twin Towers and certainly the Pentagon and Building Number 7, and that is a conspiracy theory. That is the government's conspiracy theory, and Professor Jones challenged that. So basically what's happened there?
Well, it's sort of an interesting situation because the media has been very hostile towards Professor Jones and has been trying to paint him as sort of a radical free agent, which is entirely not the case. This is the kind of person who is a very reserved, very careful-spoken college professor who is very good at what he does. He's a mechanical engineering professor who's one of the most liked professors among the students there at BYU because he knows his stuff. And he was, in sort of a reluctant way, found through his observations of what happened with the events of 9/11 with the three World Trade Centers that supposedly collapsed because of the airplanes that slammed into them, and then because of the effects of the two main towers, a third building that was part of the World Trade Center complex, they call it Building Number 7, supposedly came down as well, all because of this rubble. And he studied this, and he studied at first just the free fall rates, or the rate of collapse of the buildings. And what he noted was that the rate of collapse of the buildings was the same rate as if they had just fallen straight down.
In other words, there was no resistance at all to the collapse of the building.
Exactly, which is what he noticed, which violates the fundamental principle of physics, which he brought to light, and that is that in order to break up all of the steel and concrete, it takes energy. Which means that some of the downward energy of the collapsing building would have been absorbed and thus would have slowed down the collapse of the building. And he started to analyze, and other researchers as well started to analyze the footage of the collapsing building, and they found some interesting points on the footage that seemed to show little puffs of smoke that was actually underneath the collapsing rubble. So it was before the rubble had actually reached them there was these little puffs of smoke that would spurt out the sides of the building, which sort of had the same signature as what we call squibs, which are a signature of explosives that are inside the building. And so he was all very reluctant to actually put into words what all of his findings were, which was that basically the buildings did not come down just because of the burning caused by the airplanes that hit them, but there had to have been some other facilitators that allowed the buildings to come down. And as, of course, this story developed and grew and became more and more of a blockbuster thing, several other college professors and academics have started to get on board with this and conceive that he's got some really valid points. His strongest point actually concerns the third building, not the two main Trade Center towers, but the third building, World Trade Center Building 7, which supposedly collapsed because of fires that were started in it after the because of the rubble and shockwave of the two towers that collapsed right next to it. But it collapsed several hours later, and it is the only instance of its kind where a steel building, a steel-framed building of its kind, has collapsed in the way that it did because of fires. And if you look at the video of it, it's quite surprising. The collapse of it really looks like a controlled demolition.
And, of course, anybody can go up on the Internet and type in Google and then Building Number 7. There are a number of examples of videos that you can look at on Google that show you that building come down. And, first of all, the roof caves in, and then the base of the building, 47 floors below, just disintegrates and the building comes down. This is obviously a controlled demolition because it falls symmetrically. There's no reason for it falls symmetrically unless this is carefully planned and there's explosives in the base of the building. And, of course, go ahead, Andrew.
Well, no, I was going to say that what you say exactly right here in Las Vegas.
Hold that thought. I'll be just there in a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we were just talking about Stephen Jones, Dr. Stephen Jones. And, of course, this is a professor of engineering at Brigham Young University who questioned why the Twin Towers came down and pointed out that they were falling at the speed of gravity. You could not do that. There would be resistance. Certainly the vertical pillars, you know, nobody's explained why they would buckle, certainly, all the way down. They might have buckled at one point, and the top of the building might have fallen off, but they would all dissolve all the way down so that there would be absolutely no resistance to either one of the Twin Towers coming down. But then the big thing was Building Number 7. Why did it come down? There's never been a building built like that with that type of construction that ever came down through fire, and this came down some 7 hours after the other buildings had collapsed. And if you see the films up on the Internet, you'll see the roof of the building, the penthouse, simply fall into the upper story, and then, almost simultaneously, the whole base of the building explodes, and the building falls into its own footprint, doesn't veer one side or the other, comes straight down. Obviously, a controlled demolition. Go ahead, Andrew, because you were saying you've seen the same things right there in Las Vegas, haven't you?
Yes, precisely, and there's a great deal of demolition that takes place here, and all of the demolitions of the old hotels and casinos that is going on to reclaim the valuable land that's close to the strip has to be done demolishing the old buildings. And after you watch several videos of these professionals who go in and plant the demolition, you start to see how it struggles to make sure that none of the debris escapes outside of the footprint and to keep it as contained as possible. And if you look at what happened at the World Trade Center, look exactly the same way. Not that that's complete evidence in and of itself, but there have been a few cases where even with professionals going in to do the demolition jobs here in Las Vegas, there have been cases where the building has withstood all of the explosives and hasn't come down, particularly steel-framed buildings. I'm a civil engineer by trade, and the structural aspects of buildings are meant to be redundant, which means that the entire building is meant to support itself if one of the supports were to give way or to collapse or to be compromised in some way. And you see these buildings working in this way sometimes against all of the odds of the demolition crews, who spend a great deal of time planning the explosives. And a steel-framed building that has one or two members compromised will, by fire, almost always hold itself up. And if it doesn't hold itself up, just the one small portion that has to be extremely compromised in order to bring down even a portion of it will fall down. And this is exactly the kind of a building that we're talking about with World Trade Center 7. It wasn't just simply blasted away by the falling down of the two towers. I mean, it lasted for several hours afterwards, and supposedly came down because of fire. And fire does compromise steel, but it makes the steel sag, and slowly over time. It has never in the history of steel buildings brought down a complete collapse of the steel building in a catastrophic way like the World Trade Center 7 did. So more and more people who are starting to look past the generic story about what happened with 9/11 and are actually examining the evidence for themselves are starting to see inconsistencies here. In fact, there was a poll that was put out by CNN, actually. CNN reported on it, at least. They said that, quote, the percentage of Americans who blame the Bush administration for September 11th attacks on New York and Washington has risen from almost a third to almost a half over the past 4 years. This was a CNN poll, and this was released early last week. It said, it asked people whether they blame the Bush administration for the attacks, and get this, 45% said that either a great deal or a moderate amount of the blame was on the Bush administration. The poll also showed a surprising resistance of the American people to the constant propaganda from the Bush administration that says that we can win the war on terror. More than half of them, 57%, are saying that they think that the terrorists will, quote, always find a way to launch attacks no matter what the U.S. government does, unquote, said CNN.
Well, as long as we're over there killing their women and children, there will be always people who will fight back to defend their country. And if we were occupied by communist troops, how many Americans would be out in the streets opposing them militarily with whatever techniques and means we had? We are viewed in Iraq and Afghanistan as occupiers. We told the Iraqi people we were only going in to get rid of Osama bin Laden, and that we were going to leave the government and leave the structure of society and the military intact, and then pull out. And we lied to them. We dissolved their army, we dissolved their civil service, we dissolved their police force, we created the chaos, we refused to build up a new Iraqi army, and we've created the chaos there, and we're looked upon as the occupiers. And 100,000 Iraqi citizens have died as a result of this, and almost 100,000 Americans either dead or wounded. And yet there's a serious question as to what really happened on 9/11. This is the tragedy.
That's right.
Think of the implications. Because if this was really an intelligence operation, and we have people, at least one person from intelligence who's admitted that it was, at least we can quote, give you this quotation from a book we carry, then of course this was all unnecessary. And the Bush administration is covering for the culprits who did it. That is what's so frightening to think about.
It is. And people like Stephen Jones have been afraid to come to these conclusions that are basically inevitable once you start to look at this evidence. I mean, it's clearly that there must have been some access made to these buildings to be able to get these explosives in. And that leads to conclusions about the government involvement and complicity there. And it's been interesting to watch what happens with how the media portrays people like Stephen Jones, that they can't automatically discredit based just on their evidence. And when Professor Jones was just saying, all I see is an anomaly here based on this evidence, people tried to sweep it under the rug. He rarely got much press attention. It was mostly just people logging onto his website and checking on it. After a while, the university asked him to shut it down because they were afraid of the conflict that it was creating there. But after a while, this got bigger and bigger. Now Jones is co-chairman of a group called Scholars for 9/11 Truth, which is a group of more than 75 college educators who openly say that they doubt the official story of 9/11 being strictly a foreign terrorist attack. So here he and these other reputable academics are being critical and are adding a very strong voice to the critical movement, and it's starting to set off a firestorm of controversy that can't be swept under the rug. And so now watch what happens now. For instance, the media calls Professor Jones and starts to ask him questions about this. For instance, he was on NPR earlier last week, and they pressed him about what his conclusions then were about this, to try to draw out points to be able to criticize his conclusions. They kind of surpassed the hard evidence that he had and jumped to his conclusions, which through his time spent researching this, he said in one statement on the Radio West program, he said that he believed that they were government persons, ultimately directed by neoconservatives within the Bush administration. All of these, of course, are reasonable points, logical points of thought based on the Bush administration going to war with Afghanistan and Iraq because of these things. And then he said he also adds additional culpability to members of the international banking cartel. Now, this is one area that the media grabbed and has run with it, trying to discredit Professor Jones. And it's very interesting how they go about it. It's a classic case of using a straw man argument, which is to put up a fake reason and then point out how this is ludicrous without actually addressing the true fundamental and important evidence.
Of course, I think that Professor Jones is foolish to say who he thought did it. It's simply that somebody did it, and you don't know who did it. Well, let's get back to Andrew Scouse. We're just talking about Professor Jones, who I believe is a very sincere gentleman, and he never should have let them push him into a corner saying who he thought did it, because all we know is that what we've been told is not true. To say it's the international bankers and the neocons, I mean, it could be a totally independent intelligence movement, but it has to be somebody that is able to manipulate things. It has to be somebody who can actually get onto the Internet. For instance, if you go onto the Internet, look up Professor Jones' articles and the articles he's written about 911, and there are links to them, and then you go to those links, and there's no article there. Now, you can find his article at the Journal of 911 Studies, But, I mean, I spent 15, 20 minutes on the Internet looking, and every site I went to, somebody had taken it down off the Internet. Who has the ability to do that? Well, only somebody with the intelligence agencies, of course. So, but, you know, so anyway, of course, poor Dr. Jones, you know, I wish somebody had gotten to him ahead of time and said, don't let them put you into a corner, just said somebody did it, because this could not have happened the way that it had. And anyway, I'm sure they've had great fun trying to discredit a very brave and courageous individual who I think is very, very sincere. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, and I think, above all, these mistakes that he makes of actually voicing his opinion about what he thinks is the root cause of it is actually a credit to his academic intent. He is voicing what he believes most of the evidence points to, and this is the scientific method to propose a theory and to have it debated until with other reasonable, logical people to come up with points for and against until you can debate it based on the actual evidence to prove or disprove the theory, and then come up with a better one and a better one and a better one. And, you know, he's such an honest person that I don't think he sees the evil and twisted intent of the media to try to discredit him in these ways. For instance, just after he finished up at NPR, they interviewed a University of Utah professor named Robert Goldberg. Now, this Goldberg is basically a professional conspiracy debunker. His business is to present the most bizarre aspects of conspiracy theories so as to make it as easy as possible to debunk them. And so what Goldberg did was to focus on Stephen Jones' comments about the international banking cartel and create a and work off that to try to point out how that statement is a statement of anti-Semitism, which is completely ludicrous if you look at it for the evidence that it is. There's no, I don't even want to get into it deep, but this is how things work. The media asks these provocative questions and...
Well, hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with Andrew Skousen. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Andrew is talking about Stephen Jones, Professor Stephen Jones, who was asked, of course, well, then, if you think the buildings were brought down, who do you think did it? Well, he thought the neocons and maybe the international bankers. Well, then, of course, somebody named, which was his Goldberg, Professor Goldberg, or is that Goldberg?
That's right. Goldberg. Exactly.
Then it says, well, if he says the international bankers, he's obviously anti-Semitic, because after all, the international bankers are anti-Semitic. And the truth of the matter is, the international bankers are not Jewish. I mean, if you get into some of the biggest international banking houses, for instance, Lehman Brothers, who was the head of that for many years? A man named Pete Peterson, who was who was, of course, a Greek, but he was also, of course, the president of the Council on Foreign Relations. And then you get to the background of Goldman Sachs, and you find out that there many, many Rhodes Scholars were on the board of directors of that. And they, what they have done is they've created this a straw man to knock down. But if you study the history of international banking, it is predominantly not Jewish at all. And yet anybody who dares to mention the power of the international financiers is immediately branded as anti-Semitic. They have created the straw man to knock it down, to conceal the evil force behind international banking. Pick the story up there, Andrew.
Precisely. No, that's an excellent background. And I just kind of like to close this story here with this thought that there are a great deal more and more people, credible people, who are analyzing the evidence for themselves, which is really what we need to encourage people to do more of. The people that try to discredit honest people like Stephen Jones, who have looked at the evidence, is to work simply off of hyperbole and speculation and straw man arguments, which don't work for people that take the time to do their own research about these things and look into the evidence for themselves. And that's what I would like to encourage people most of all to do. Don't take my word for it. Look at the evidence for yourself and make your own conclusions. It's quite compelling evidence all by itself, and you can come to your own conclusions about it. But there are a lot of people that are working on conclusions, and I think that some very good progress is being made in these directions, especially by people like yourself, Dr. Sam, who is out there looking for these things and tracking this truth down where you can find it. I'd like to segue this into a separate story. This separate story has to do with the fairly recent developments in the whistleblower legislation. Now, this is a little bit of a difficult story to talk about because it's a little bit more technical. But I think it's absolutely critical that people start to understand why whistleblower legislation is so important and why we can't just wish it to go away. If you look at the events of things like 9/11 and you start to come to some of these inevitable conclusions about the complicity of government within these things and how much they had to know to be able to actually pull these kinds of things off, you start to wonder to yourself, how is it that they can have all of this manpower doing all of these terrible, atrocious things without somebody coming clean with their conscience and spilling the beans about these things? And this is where whistleblower legislation is critical. If we don't give people the right protections that are guaranteed under the Constitution to be able to protect their rights to come forward with information that they have to protect them against the people that don't want the information leaked out, and then take it through proper channels to make sure that excessively sensitive information isn't just given out to the general public, but still so that specific juries and courts have access to these secrets to verify whether or not this is a true cause or not. We lose fundamental rights here, and it is absolutely critical to look at this legislation. Our rights are on the table right here.
And of course, what happens is the government classifies all the information. It's classified, and if you reveal it, you go to jail. That's the way it is. We can't let the American people know the truth. What do you think would happen to anybody who came forward and admitted that the government was involved in taking those buildings down, and it wasn't, of course, those hijackers at all? Why, of course, they'd be revealing a secret information. They'd go to prison for the rest of their lives, or they might very well end up being assassinated. as has happened to others who've tried to tell the truth. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Andrew Scouse, and he's talking about whistleblower legislation. So pick up the story there, Andrew.
All right, well, let's take a look at what a potential whistleblower might be looking at as far as his chances would be in a court of law. Now, in just for some background on this, in 1994, we had the Whistleblowers Protection Act, which supposedly established a specialty court to be able to help protect the rights of whistleblowers. And recently, in May, a Supreme Court decision, Garcetti versus Ceballos, took away the free speech protections for any government worker to disclose fraud, waste, or abuse on the job.
They took away their protection. In other words, if they were trying to tell about fraud, waste, or abuse, they had no protection, which they had before. How could the Supreme Court have done that?
That's right. And they actually ruled that current whistleblower laws make constitutional rights unnecessary. So here's the Supreme Court that is supposed to decide which laws get passed that are unconstitutional and then strike down those laws, doing the exact opposite. Ruling that the laws stand in face of their differences with the Constitution.
And so much for Judge Roberts and Alito. How did they vote on it, you know?
I don't know. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, I wouldn't be surprised because, actually, I think if the liberals were there, they would have supported the rights of whistleblowers. But now you've got these two, Roberts and Alito, and they will do what George Bush wants them to do. Their political point is they are not independent men at all.
That's right. That's precisely right. And if you look at the history of these two men, their history of voting, especially on these issues of fundamental rights, is not good and is not clean. But look at some of the statistics. Since 1994, the specialty court with monopoly power over the law of interpretation has ruled against whistleblowers in 122 out of 123 decisions on the merits. Since 1999, merit board administrative hearings have ruled against them in 53 out of 55 cases, including all since 2003, when the president's newly appointed board chairman took office. Now, if you were a whistleblower and you looked at these statistics, you would have second thoughts about coming out in the open.
Hold on, Doug. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan and Andrew Skousen is simply pointing out that the courts have consistently come out against whistleblowers in one series 122 out of 123 times. One case did they support the whistleblower. All the rest of them, it was perfectly all right for the government to be involved in waste and abuse and all harassment of anybody who tried to get the truth out to the American people. If the government is to be our servant, then why is it that the Supreme Court is protecting the government when they harass or abuse or misuse funds? And why are they doing everything they can to discourage whistleblowers from getting the truth to the people? Or is it possible that we no longer have a representative government? We have a ruling aristocracy, and the last thing they want is for the American people to know what's really going on in Washington, D.C., and throughout the structure of government. Pick up the story there, Andrew.
That's right. Well, in this atmosphere of anti-whistleblower court decisions, there's legislation that is trying to fight its way through both houses of Congress to try to give back the protection to the fundamental rights of whistleblowers. Now, one of the faithful defenders of whistleblower rights is a website called CommonDreams.com, and it is trying to illustrate the thumb in Congress to sabotage those who would strengthen the whistleblower protection. So let's look a little bit at some of the legislation is trying to do. The Senate legislation has four cornerstones, which are one, to restore the paper rights that were actually previously approved by Congress and three times were erased by judicial activism, which, by the way, the administration didn't appeal. Now, this is an important thing. The administration should have appealed these court rulings to bring the court to task for unjustly voting down their laws. These are the checks and balances that we don't see happening, and this is because there is some complicity between the two branches of government, which is starting to break down some of the structure that the forefathers put in place. But back to this. So that was the first cornerstone, which is restoration of paper rights. The second was normal access to appeals courts. Although here at the World Affairs Brief, we're not very positive about this point, since almost all of the courts, including the appeals courts, are controlled. The third aspect is due process rights against security clearance retaliation. Now, this is one of the first means and methods to intimidate whistleblowers that goes on. The first thing that they do is yank their security clearances as soon as they get a hint that this person might decide to leak some information. And historically, they've just done this whenever they've felt like it. But with this new legislation, there would have to be a due process to have to go through to be able to take away somebody's security clearance. And the fourth would be protection against gag orders on whistleblowing disclosure of unclassified information. And this would, of course, also apply to the entire range of disclosures, including Food and Drug Safety Administration, Food, Drug, and Safety information, as well as scientific freedom, especially that concerns climate change. All of these things that we see them clamping down on whistleblowers on should ideally be opened up by these four cornerstones. But the Senate legislation is critically lacking in a few areas, specifically the areas that we see the legislation that passed through the House, which unanimously passed the House Government Reform Committee, but unfortunately didn't get into the bill that it was attached to. And this legislation mirrors closely the Senate legislation, but there were three additional things which are very important. One was to provide access to jury trials for a fair day in court, as available to corporate workers since the 2002 Sarbanes-Oxley law. Now, this is important because if you take it to a jury, you aren't susceptible to the whims of a judge, which as we're increasingly seeing, are controlled or are afraid to let this information out. So if you make it a matter of juries, you have a much better chance of the information being properly looked at and not swept under the carpet. The second point that the House legislation had, in addition to what the Senate had, was extending Whistleblower Protection Act coverage to all workers paid with taxpayer funds, including airport baggage screeners, government contractor employees, and intelligence agency whistleblowers. That's important to broaden the scope. These people sometimes have important information to get out as well. Third, was limiting the so-called state's secrets privilege so that it does not cancel national security whistleblower reprisal cases. Now, this latter restriction is so powerful that it actually insert these changes into the defense bill and attach it to the defense bill.
What do you think they just forgot? There were powerful forces in North Carolina that do not want the truth to come out.
That's right. And, in fact, the state secret privilege is the most important aspect of all of this legislation. Well, it's not there now, but the state secret privilege is the ultimate trump card that the government always pulls out. Well, it's a matter of national security. We can't disclose that information. We can't disclose that information. And no judge or jury behind locked doors, whatever, has access to even look at this and decide whether or not it actually is a matter of national security or not, which is properly what should happen. It's possible to allow a properly formed committee or group of jurors to see this information and take a look at it and see if in fact this violates legal laws and checks and balances on what the government and the Defense Department and the CIA and the NSA are doing. All of this information should be scrutinized by courts. It doesn't mean that it has to be automatically leaked out to the general public, but it should be available for the court processes. And this state secret privilege is the absolutely most egregious part about the whistleblower's rights.
And, of course, the thing is that this means that they can do whatever they want to, and they can say, we can't let the public know it's a state secret. Could you imagine what somebody wanted to come forward and say, we know exactly what happened on September 11th. This was an intelligence operation to create an incident so that we could get into a war in Afghanistan and Iraq and Iran. And they would say, well, no, that's a state secret. The state can't let you tell the American people that. Think of the implications. Why? And so the person would be violating the law, could be sent to prison for the rest of their life for telling the truth. And you wonder why nobody has come forward to say what really happened that day?
That's right. That's right. And whistleblowers have historically had important effects on things. Even in the few cases where they've actually been allowed to come forth, I mean, they've made changes to convince the Department of Homeland Security to stop routinely blowing the cover on undercover air marshals, so that they now have a possible chance to thwart future hijackers. I have my own opinion about air marshals, but I mean, this is an important aspect. And whistleblowers exposed how the Department of Homeland Security routinely makes immigration decisions on residency without checking evidence files on terrorist connections. Just months before the tragedy, whistleblowers were ignored when exposing a total security breakdown at the same Boston airport gate that hijackers exploded on 9/11. Of course, now it's our opinion that this breakdown in security at this specific airport gate was done on purpose to facilitate the hijacking. But it just goes deeper and deeper, and you know, whistleblowers like this could add, you know, innumerable clues and facts to help us understand exactly what happened here. And of course, that's exactly what the government doesn't want, which is why the whistleblowers are increasingly being intimidated, often being put in jail themselves, or facing jail sentences, or put on gag orders or restrictions, or losing their jobs, or intimidated. All of these things are happening to be able to keep wraps on these huge secrets that are circulating within the dark side of government organizations. So it's not very positive. There is some good legislation out there, but even if it does get passed, without the critical aspects of it, most largely of which is the state secret privilege, without getting some kind of legislation to overcome that, where any good aspects that get passed with whistleblower protection legislation will be null and void with just that Trump card that they have alone. So it's not looking very favorable there, Dr. Stan.
Well, I think the thing that the American people have to understand is that our founding fathers did not trust government. They knew that the power of government had to be limited, else it would be tyrannical. And step by step, the wicked people who would establish a fascist society, and that's really what we have, a corporate socialist society where people are regulated and controlled from the cradle to the grave, that what they have done is gradually expand the power of government. This is what our founding fathers feared. That's why they put in the 10th Amendment that restricted what the Congress could do. And most of what Congress does today is a violation of the law. But anybody who tries to talk about that immediately is attacked and vilified by the controlled media. And, of course, the whistleblowers are trying to point out the gross corruption at every level of government. And literally trillions of dollars have disappeared from the Defense Department, and all shucks, they have no idea what's happened to it. And anybody who does know would be afraid to come forward. This is the tragedy. We cannot have a free society when we do not have a transparent society. Go ahead, that's, Andrew.
That's exactly right. And we've got to be able to have forms and methods to be able to get the truth and information out there, correct information to the people. Well, I think I've talked about that to my satisfaction. I'd like to move on to some very interesting comments that Pastor Chuck Baldwin has made about the continued U.S. Funding of radical Arab groups and Muslim organizations. I'd actually like to quote briefly from him. He says, "As America remembers the attacks on the Twin Towers, the Bush administration continues to fund various Arab states with billions of U.S. tax dollars. First, it needs to be noted that it was the U.S. government that years ago provided Iran with the Tehran Research Reactor and the weapons-grade uranium needed to power the facility, fuel that could still be used to help produce nuclear arms. It was the U.S. government that supplied Iran with a major nuclear facility, the same facility that President Bush now insists must be destroyed. Just recently, the Bush administration announced plans to sell $4.6 billion worth of arms to several Arab states, including United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, Jordan, Oman, and Saudi Arabia. This includes military equipment listed to transfer, includes Black Hawk helicopter gunships, AH-64 Apache helicopters, M-11 armored personnel carriers, Javelin anti-tank missiles, and modernized MA-1 Abrams tanks, which are outfitted with air conditioning and infrared sights meant for commanders and gunners." And he says, "Even more paradoxical is the fact that the Bush administration recently offered citizens of Saudi Arabia scholarships study aviation in the United States. It's just absolutely amazing, Dr. Stan, what the Bush administration can get away with openly financing." And this is even the stuff that is above the table.
Why are we financing Saudi students who want to come here? Why don't the Saudi Arabians finance their own students who want to come here and learn to fly? Have they forgotten that 15 of the 19 hijackers were Saudi citizens? Or maybe they know something about Saudi Arabia the rest of us don't know.
Precisely. It's just absolutely incredible. But here at the World of Thursdays, we'd actually like to point out that even more egregious is what happens under the table. The U.S., for instance, continues to fund the Palestinian Authority using various third-party back-channel aids or sometimes using the mantra of humanitarian assistance. Now keep in mind that the Palestinian Authority employs most of the terrorists in Gaza, and it does so by putting them on the public security payroll as so-called security officers and policemen. Thus, it can fund them and arm them at the same time. And then when they get loose and to perform the terrorist act, the Palestinian Authority tries to hide by saying, oh, well, they were just rogue people. We don't know what happened there.
But, of course, the Palestinian Authority is run by Hamas, which is an Islamic terrorist organization. Why are we funding the Palestinian organization when it's run by an Islamic terrorist organization, Hamas?
Precisely.
Except,
that's
maybe
right.
If you go into the background, who created Hamas? Why, it was created by the CIA and by Israel, at least according to a book we carry called The Devil's Game. And of course, nothing as it appears to be, is it, Andrew?
No, you are absolutely right. And in fact, the CIA continues to train these same Palestinian terrorists in ways that are clearly designed to assist them in carrying out terror attacks. And this happens at the CIA's Virginia, quote-unquote, farm, where they learn bomb-making, secret communications, codes, and all kinds of other stuff.
So we're training the terrorists, and then we're fighting the terrorists. We'll be right back. Well, Andrew, you got 3 minutes to finish up the program.
All right. Well, I would like to make this comment. We were talking about the U.S. funding of the Palestinian Authority, and sometimes the U.S. actually needs a little bit of help in this regard. Take, for instance, what happened recently with Hamas's Palestinian Authority attempting to put on a show of benign leadership. Last week, Palestinian Authority President Abbas announced that the ruling party Hamas and his quote-unquote opposition, Fatah/PLO party, would form a national government of unity, which is, of course, a euphemism for the joining of supposedly opposition forces in a unified government. Now, this is a show to facilitate the resumption of international aid. You have to realize that the Palestinian Authority is trying to deal with strikes by hundreds of thousands of its own public workers who haven't been paid in a long time, months. The Palestinian Authority runs this huge welfare organization, which is what causes it, in large part, to be so popular among the Arab people. It is looked at as a bread giver here, and this cry for help to fund the welfare organization is meant to milk the international community for constant aid, which they get. And unfortunately, most of that aid goes to funding terrorism. The U.S. uses, above board communication to try to give an appearance of being hostile. But if you look at what it does behind the scenes, it's clear that they're just trying to come to a negotiating point that they can both agree on to be able to allow them and facilitate them to give lots of aid without actually requiring any major steps or action on the part of Hamas and the Palestinian Authority. And you'll see this happen over and over again. The bottom line, I guess, Dr. Stan, is that you have to watch what goes on and specifically you have to watch what they do and not what they say. It's an age old adage that it specifically applies here. We could go into it.
Hey, we're out of time, Andrew. Thank you so very much for being with us. It's always a
thank
pleasure.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Good night. My all right, fine. Well, let me, ladies and gentlemen, let me point out that nothing as it appears to be. And if you get into the background of where did this whole Islamic terrorist movement come from, it was financed by the CIA and by our intelligence agencies. And, of course, you can go to the books, Dollars for Terror. You can go to the book, The Unholy Wars. You can go to the book, which we still do carry, entitled Devil's Game by Robert Dreyfus. We carry this book, and you'll find out that our intelligence agencies financed a great deal of this whole Islamic terrorist movement, the U.S., Pakistani intelligence, and Saudi Arabia, creating the best enemies money could buy. Nothing is as it appears to be. We keep hearing about Osama bin Laden. We keep seeing old pictures of Osama bin Laden. Are we seeing any new pictures of Osama bin Laden? How do we know he's still alive? It doesn't really matter. We quake in fear every time we see his picture on the television screen, because if we don't give up our freedom, Osama bin Laden's going to get us. And ladies and gentlemen, they're playing games with our minds. We are governed, our minds are molded, our tastes are formed, our ideas suggested, largely by men we have never heard of, said Edward Bernays, and that's exactly what's going on today. Well, let me, of course, remind you, we are having an all-day conference here in the Monterey Bay area on the 29th of October, and we hope many of you will be able to come from out across America. If you're coming, you'd like to know about hotels, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Constance Cumby is going to be giving two talks. Chris Pitto will be having an hour and a half to talk about the secret mysteries of America's beginning. And, of course, Michael Shaw will be there talking about the transformation of America using sustainable development. And Barrett chose us a wonderful talk. You won't want to miss this. But more than that, you'll get a chance to meet people from across America and to get the latest information that we'll be putting together specifically for this this meeting. So, again, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We do hope that many of you, if you're interested in laying in a food supply, why, we'll be glad to send you a food catalog. You need to have a 6 months food supply on hand. You need a big Berkey or a Berkey Light water filter, because you've got to be able to have clean water. You certainly would want to lay in health supplies, and we have a health catalog. A lot of the things that Barbara and I take to maintain our health, and I'd say we're doing pretty well for a couple of old folks. And, of course, we hope that if you'd like a health catalog, just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, if you'd like to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you should. You can go up on our webpage at RadioLiberty.com and pull down our newsletters and copy them. In fact, you're welcome to copy any of the things that I have produced. If you want to see Brotherhood of Darkness and you can't afford to, you can go up on the Internet and Google in Brotherhood of Darkness video, and it's up on the net in several places where it can be seen at no charge at all. You need to get my interview with Professor Sutton before he passed away. The best enemies money can buy. Going into the background of how the United States financed Russia, starting back in 1918 and 1919, we financed Russia and we kept financing Russia. We financed the North Vietnamese all during the Vietnam War to keep the war going. Do you think that's why we're funding Pakistan today? Who is funding the Taliban? Who are crossing from Pakistan into Afghanistan to kill our troops and the NATO troops there? It's like deja vu all over again. Understand, we're involved in a spiritual battle being carried out on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. And help us to get the information out. Help us to point out how we're financing Communist China today in preparation for World War III. It's coming, but we have the opportunity to communicate and get the information out. You just need to help us. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty. For our provision and protection, our number again, 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, www.radioliberty.com.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, wherever you're situated on this great, big, beautiful blue globe floating through the void of God's creation. It is Thursday, the 21st of September, 2006, and after watching the CNN interview with Wolf Blister and George W. Bush last night, I know there are even more people, throngs, dare I say, legions of people.